Welcome to episode 142 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series, The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Ataban Cipher, The Maven and Reeve mystery series, and my latest middle grade novel, The First Summer of Callie McGee. I'm here with my co-host, the authorial Megan Daly, celebrated teacher librarian, and author of Raising Readers and the brand new picture book, The Beehive. Megan is also editor of the Teacher Anthology. Very, very busy person. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So what is occurring in the celebration of Megan this week?
Ah, so much celebrating, you know, with the Beehive book, but also I've finally moved out of my house. We are staying with my parents at the moment until our new house is ready. And I wanted to give a massive shout out to my neighbours, the Smiths, Ackworths, Mutzig, Leslies and Vickersons. I've been in my house for 21 years, Alison Tate.
I can't even imagine that.
I know.
I haven't been anywhere 21 years.
Well, I've been there 21 years. It's the only house the girls have ever known. It's in a cul-de-sac, which, as the smallest bee calls it, is the Circle Street. And over those 21 years, there's been babies. We've co-parented each other's children. There's been lots of mowing of lawns. People have mown my lawn a lot. There's been lots of baking shared, countless chats in the Circle Street over bins. There's been meals. You know, my neighbours helped organise my husband's funeral. There's been grief and loss. There's been new love and blended families and them watching this Brady Bunch come together. So it's a big, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody needs good neighbours.
That and the Brady Bunch theme song are entirely appropriate for this week's episode of the podcast. But yeah, it's just been a big week. So
it's a lot. Like I know we've been, you know, obviously we've talked about this on the podcast, but clearly you and I also have 1,000 text messages and discussions and other things going on every week. And, you know, this, it's been a process and it was always going to be a big, big thing. So in some ways I'm really excited because it is a, you know, it's a goodbye, but we're also doing a hello.
Absolutely.
To your new book at the same time. Yeah. And so, you know, it's life, isn't it? It's the up and the down all in the 1 week and the chaos always.
Always the chaos.
Always the chaos. Well, so I'm obviously watching all that from afar and supporting where I can, you know, with various things that I
so
can do.
So much support.
But you know, for me, it's like, well, school's back, yay, right? But it sort of doesn't mean as much as it used to because obviously I've only got Book Boy Junior at home and he's, you know, going to year 12 and he's this independent, enormous person. He ran into a friend of ours, the mum of another friend of his at the gym the other day, and he came out and he was looking quite awkward. And I was like, what's the matter? He goes, she just kept saying that I look like a man now. I'm like, well, you kind of do, mate. He's just, you know, you spend 6 days a week at the gym. You're sort of not, you're not small. What can I say? You're big. Anyway, so, you know, things have changed. I didn't even have to buy new school shoes. I didn't, you know, the feet sort of stopped it. I know. They stopped at size 11 about, you know, sort of, I don't know, March last year and have remained. And he's not kicking balls in the playground anymore. So they're actually, you know, staying in fairly good shape. Like, it just, all those things that you don't even realize that you're kind of doing. It's like, oh my God, the school shoes are wrecked again. Well, actually they're not. They're polished and they look okay. So I didn't even have to do that.
To that time.
I didn't have to buy new books. I didn't have to buy a new laptop. Like, it's a whole nother world. What it does mean, however, is less shouting in my day because there's a lot of shouting at the PS4 that goes on around here. And I mean, if you are also living with someone who plays online games in a noise cancelling headset, you will know what it's like. They don't even know how loud they are, and I feel like I'm in the battle most of the time. and also less of that horrible TikTok influencer voice in my life. Because you hear a lot of that, like when he's watching YouTube or when he's watching bits and pieces. I call it the TikTok influencer, but it covers all social media. You know that voice? It's kind of like part drill sergeant, part used car salesman, and it's always too loud, and it's at that same monotonous level. Blah, 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 blah. It drives me crazy, and I don't understand how he watches so much of it. I'm like, is that the same one you were watching 5 minutes ago? And he's like, no, totally different. Not really. Totally different. Anyway, drives me crazy.
Everyone has a teacher they remember. In Teacher Teacher, an anthology edited by Megan Daly, 30 Australian writers share stories of the inspirational educators who changed their lives. Find out more at megandaly.com.au.
Right, enough about the voice problems that I have. Obviously, I'm highly susceptible to a voice in a book as well as, in my ears. And we are going to talk about some voices, but we are going to talk about them in book form. What's in the book mail this week, Megan Daly?
Well, one would think that I might be slightly over, you are over certain voices. I'm slightly over sloths in books, one would think. But then. Sloths Love Parties by Rory H. Mather and illustrated by Binny Talib arrived in my book mail this week. And I saw the title before I pulled out the whole book and I thought, I don't know if I can do a sloth. Sloth books have been very popular in my school library over the last 3 or 4 years. But then I pulled out the whole book and it is just utterly glorious. So then I was very interested to see if it would be a new angle on a sloth. And it really is. I'll read you the blurb. Sloths love to sleep, but do you know what else they love? Parties. Put on your dancing shoes and join Marty the Sloth for the grooviest celebrations the rainforest has ever seen. Just don't forget to bring your PJs. And it is actually really a very different take on the sloth story. I'm just flicking through the pages as we speak. Stunning End Papers by Binny Talib. I really like the design of them. And it's told from the perspective of the sloths, and it talks about how the reason they're always tired is because of all of that celebrating and partying. And it's just gorgeous, absolutely beautiful graphic design and illustrations, really, really bright. One for young people, I would say from toddlers on, who love partying and who also love sleeping. So a new sloth book, one a little bit different from the others that we've seen.
Maybe I'll give that one to Book Boy Junior. Sounds like it's right up his alley.
It does, doesn't it, actually? Yeah. And then my second piece of book mail this week is Little Book Baby by Katrina Germain and illustrated by Cheryl Orsini. Now, this book came to me just before Christmas and I was absolutely taken with it and couldn't wait to talk about it as part of our book mail. It's one that I'm going to be gifting to a lot of new babies. It's a gorgeous small format book and very, if you know Cheryl Orsini's illustrations, just very whimsical and beautiful. And I feel like they've got that, they would have huge appeal to would read this to a baby, but also the parents of babies. They're just very pastely and beautiful and gentle. I'm going to read you the blurb. Little book baby wakes soon after dawn, beginning the day with a cuddly book yawn. This little baby loves sharing books, books on the tram with dad, books at picnics with Nana and Pa, and even bath time books with mummy. Morning, noon, and night, books make everything better. Now, I mean, why you or I did not come up with this idea is beyond me. It is absolutely beautiful. I'm so impressed with it. It's about books. It's about loving books from babyhood onwards. It's definitely one that I'm adding to my must-be-purchase for all newborn babies book list.
Sounds divine. Sounds absolutely divine. I love Katrina's work and I follow her Substack newsletter where she kind of shares bits and pieces about her process and what she's doing and what she's thinking about life. And it's always interesting to me. I love to see how, how other authors work and how they think. It's really, really good. She does great work. And Cheryl, of course, created the Mapmaker Chronicles map. So, she is forever in my heart. So I've got a couple of picture books as well this week. The first one is called All You Can Be by Angela Cassabine, could be Cassabini, sorry if I got that wrong, and Michelle Conn, illustrated by Michelle Conn. Now, I picked this one up because I was drawn to it. It has very, very similar colours to The First Summer of Callie McGee. It's that bright blue, the yellow, It Says Summer. And it's a lovely book, which is all about, you know, being the best that you can be, being strong, being cheeky, being whimsical, being all of those things. And it's sort of like illustrated in these divinely bright, glorious, you know, engaging illustrations that just sing of summer. It's lovely. It's like a bright summer's day. And it sort of like takes us through jumping off the jetty, and it takes us through flying kites, and it takes us through, you know, dancing, and it takes us through swimming and surfing and all the things you love to do on holidays. And then, you know, about, you know, embracing your true self. So let me read the back. When the sun sits up high in the blue, oh, it's rhyming too, by the way, which is always fun. When the sun sits up high in the blue summer sky and you long to dive into the sea, but you're fixed to the pier and you're held there by fear, be brave, be all you can be. This is a love letter to children everywhere, encouraging them to embrace their true selves and to live their big, messy, beautiful lives to the full. Be kind, be strong, be curious, be wrong, be all you can be. And as I said, it's really engage, like the pictures just absolutely draw you in, and the message is, you know, lovely. Can't go wrong with that. Then the other one that I have is it's called Two Rabbits. I was wondering where this was going to go. It's called Two Rabbits by Larissa Ferenczak. Well, you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a counting book. You know what I'm saying here, right?
I do.
Two Rabbits by Larissa Ferenczak and Prue Pittick. And the subtitle is Even Best Friends Argue Sometimes. So it's a book about what happens when best friends fight. So I'll read you the back. What happens when best friends fight? What happens when you hurt someone by saying unkind words? And what's the best way to fix things? Little Grey Rabbit and Little Brown Rabbit are about to find out in this touching story of friendship and forgiveness. It's got a map. The end papers are this gorgeous little illustrated map of where Little Grey Rabbit's house is and where Little Brown Rabbit's house is. The illustrations are just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. The rabbits have a fight on a dark, rainy night on a cold, wet field. Go their, you know, go their separate ways. There's thumping and there's stomping and there's grumpiness. And then, of course, they have to figure out how to find their way back to each other. And it's really lovely. It's from EK Books. It's just a gorgeous exploration of an argument. And of course, we all have them. And when you're little, it can be difficult to know how to kind of, you know, to find your way back to your friend when you've had these sorts of discussions. Let's call it a discussion, a thumping, stomping discussion. So yeah, it's really, really lovely. So I can see that it would work, particularly, you know, when you've got everybody's been in that situation where their four-year-olds come home from preschool and they've had some almighty great falling out over a truck or whatever with their best friend. It's always a truck. And then I feel like that's the kind of soothing book you need to have at hand to help discuss how you might, you know, get things back on deck with the truck and the friend. So that was our book mail for this week.
A Maid with a Plan. A Squire with a Secret. Meet Maven and Reeve. Created by best-selling author A.L. Tate, the Maven and Reeve Mysteries are thrilling detective stories for middle-grade readers, full of adventure, mystery, and a taste of medieval history. Good Reading Magazine awarded 5 stars to The Firestar, the first Maven and Reeve mystery, calling it a really great book full of exhilaration and cliffhanging moments. There are now 2 thrilling Maven and Reeve mysteries to discover. Find out more at mavenandreeve.com. That's mavenandreeve.com.
All right. Now, it's our bingo question. And usually our bingo questions are the questions that come up over and over again in the Your Kids Next Read community, or they are an interview with an author. Today, we're going one better because we are not only interviewing an author, but we are also interviewing the illustrator that worked on the picture book with the author. Now, the author needs no introduction because you've just heard her quality waffling and discussing book mail. It is, of course, the wonderful celebrity teacher librarian, Megan Daly. And we are going to have a conversation about her debut picture book, which is out this week, called The Beehive. And we have invited Max Hamilton. Now, Max Hamilton is a CBCA and Whiteley award-winning illustrator, a graphic designer, and most enthusiastically a maker of children's books. And we have invited Max into referee to keep us on track and to share her thoughts and her role in the process of creating the book that has become The Beehive. So I do hope you'll enjoy having a listen to this. We certainly enjoyed putting it together. Megan Daly and Max Hamilton, welcome to Your Kids' Next Read. It makes me laugh to say that. But you're here, Megan Daly, you are here as an author. We are having an actual author chat today. And, of course, the wonderful Max Hamilton, illustrator of The Beehive as well. So, Megan, we're going to start with you, and I sincerely hope that you've been practicing this like I told you to, because otherwise this could go, it could be a longer answer than the whole book itself. Tell me about The Beehive. Give me the elevator pitch of what this book is all about.
Yeah, well, I was really appreciative that you asked this question because it made me think about my elevator pitch, which I've heard you talk about before and I've never had to prepare one. So I have prepared one. Essentially, it is the story of a beehive split in a school setting, and the main character, Willow, has been waiting all year for groundskeeper Tom to split the school's native stingless beehive in two so that she can take home her very own hive. But if you delve more deeply into the book, it's a celebration of the over 2,000 varieties of native bees, as well as European bees, that we have in Australia. And there's lots of beekeeping and general bee information packed into The Beehive. So it's perfect for young readers, but also a great gift for adult amateur beekeepers and bee enthusiasts, young and old. And the true beauty of this Nature Storybooks series from Walker Books is that it is educational as much as it is engaging. So The Beehive can be read as a bedtime story, as an informative text, or as both.
Oh, Grasshopper, I am so proud of you right now. That was fantastic. Well done. All right, so talk to me about where the idea for The Beehive came from. Like, where did it start for you?
Look, I've actually been, how far back can we go? I've been fascinated by bees since I was a really small child, walking my grandparents' farm at Redland Bay and having my granddad pointing out the colonies of white hives that were on the hill behind their house. They were European honeybee hives of a local commercial beekeeper. I've always loved bees, and I had a deep fascination and love of Winnie the Pooh from a very young age. And in fact, my first overseas solo trip was to a very small village in England where I played poo sticks off the poo sticks bridge all by myself. I got chased by a cow. It was the middle of winter in England. People thought I was mad. I was the only person there. I thought there'd be tourists. There was nobody. It was a bit scary. But I have loved Winnie the Pooh my whole life, and I have always collected first editions of Winnie the Pooh and Winnie the Pooh paraphernalia. So I've always loved bees my whole life. But The Beehive as a book began quite about maybe 7 or 8 years ago now, when I did an innovation on the Nature Storybook series by Walker Books for a year one and two class at my previous school when I was teaching library. I wrote them a narrative nonfiction text about our school native beehives, and was the very first draft of The Beehive. It's seen many iterations since, as you will know, but I wrote the first draft well before I met the beekeeper, Murray, but he's known as the beekeeper on my social media. But I guess then meeting Murray and his beekeeper father, Len Arkadiff, both of whom are thanked in the book, who is a beekeeper as well and also an entomologist, gave the book its science and its authenticity. But I like to point out that I did actually write my bee book before I met the beekeeeper.
Look at you just putting that out there. Look, the thing with you is that you've read and reviewed, let's face it, like thousands and thousands of picture books as a teacher librarian, as a blogger, as a book reviewer, as a literary judge, as a, you know, all of the things. And this is your debut picture book.
Yeah.
So I guess the question for me is, what made you think this was the idea that you needed to write as your first picture book? Why this one? Why not Megan's Day in the Library or, you know, I don't know. Like, yeah. What was it about this one?
Well, I think probably a lot of authors, and you've interviewed a lot of authors, I suspect a lot of authors say this. This was the idea that just kept coming back to me over and over. It just wouldn't leave me alone. The story of my little native bees at my previous school that I just adored, and my kids at school adored, and my own kids adored. It just kept coming back to me. It came to me in the night. It would come to me when I was walking, when I was in the shower. And it sat with me in my head for such a long time. I also saw, you know, I'm a teacher and I'm also somebody who reviews books, and I really saw in the market, because native bees have become so popular in schools and educational settings. And so I had this idea that I really wanted to educate, but also just write a lovely picture book about native bees for the entire family, because as a teacher librarian, I know that these books go home from school and get read with the family. So I wanted to write the story of native bees, talk about their importance in the environment and the joy that comes with having them, observing them, interacting with them as basically as pets. I mean, my native bees at home are my babies. And I wanted to show native bees also living very happily with European honeybees and other animals that are found in backyards in the bush, particularly as European honeybees and native bees coexist in our national parks and in nature in Australia. So there was this bit of an idea that the story was just stuck in my head, but also as an educator, I had this kind of almost burning desire to write this story down because I didn't see it anywhere else.
So, like, I was going to ask you about, you know, the most daunting aspect for you of sitting down to write the first draft, but you essentially wrote that first draft, you know, in a class environment. So did that sort of take the pressure off? You were like, I'm just going to write this and use it in my class.
No, not at all, because I wrote it for my class, but I then had this massive, when it sort of took off as an idea to with a publisher, I then had massive imposter syndrome. I don't feel that I have a huge amount of writing credit to my name. I still don't see myself as an author. And I know you don't like me saying that, Al, but I do not. I really struggle with that to this day. I see myself as an educator, and I'm okay to say this publicly. The words don't come easily to me. I talk a lot, but the writing words don't come easily to me. It is quite an effort for me. And I'm a child of the 90s, of the whole language phase. My grammar leaves a lot to be desired, as my editors will tell you.
So you said, you know, like it blew up and with a publisher, et cetera. Mm. Did you have Walker Books in mind? Like, you essentially wrote it in that nature storybook style. Did you have them in mind as a publisher from the start?
Yeah, they were the only. It was so funny because the then marketing manager of Walker Books and I had a number of chats about my text, because I'd put on my social media that I'd done this innovation on that series with my little people at school, and she encouraged me to send it in to her essentially. And then, you know, it kind of took off from there. But yes, I was only a Walker Books. I was innovating on the nature storybooks books.
Did you find that blending of narrative with fact a difficult one to achieve? Because it is a story, isn't it? And the facts are there, but there's also, you know, this sort of narrative nonfiction idea of it.
I narrative nonfiction is probably my favorite genre. So I didn't find it at all difficult. Nonfiction, you know, Raising Readers is obviously nonfiction. Teacher is nonfiction. Nonfiction is probably my first love. But I love narrative nonfiction. So I always had the story, but the facts came really easily to me.
What happened, you know, after you sent them the text? Okay. So you had the chat and you kind of, you know, you send it in. What happened at that point?
Mm-hmm. Well, the then marketing manager, as I said, was very involved in the whole process. So it was very much a non-traditional route, I suppose, to publishing. Lindsay Knight signed me, and then Christina Schulz, who had edited me with Raising Readers, she was then at UQP and then Walker Books, she edited. So that was a beautiful process because Christina understood my grammatical deficits, shall we say. But also we
quirks.
Really
let's say quirks.
No, they're deficits. but she very much understands my style of writing, and that it's very the way I speak, and how can we change that to make it more a written text with that while still maintaining Megan Daly in the story. And I think that's the mark of a really good editor, isn't it? That they can work with your text but still retain the essence of the author in it. And I think that's so important. And then Claire Halifax came on board at Walker Books, and it's been a really lovely process, you know, longer than I expected due to things like the pandemic and so forth. But it's been a really interesting process for me.
Okay. And speaking of coming on board with the project, it's time to bring in the third member of this chat, Max Hamilton. And of course, in the true Your Kids Next Read style, there's a plane going overhead here and someone's decided to whippersnip next door. So I apologize for any noise that you might hear. It's part of the nature storybooks vibe of the entire thing. Now, Max, let's talk about how you came to be involved in this project, because the two of you had not met at that stage. And in fact, I don't think I've ever met in person. Is that correct?
This is true. Yes. Hello, guys. Megan and I have never met in person, but I have followed her work for quite a long time. And in terms of me coming on board on this project, there's a few factors that came into play how I ended up illustrating the book. And firstly, it was a few years back, Megan did a wonderful book review of my first book I illustrated, My Posse Plays the Drums by Catherine Metheringham. And as a thank you for her beautiful review, I sent her some bee artworks that I'd painted. So she knew of my work already.
Adored your work.
Oh, thank you. And then secondly, I had, at the time when Walker acquired Megan's text, I had just finished illustrating Tasmanian Devil by Claire Saxby in the same series. So it was sort of just partly came down to the timing, and also Lindsay and Sarah Davis, the art director at Walker at the time, they sort of felt like my detailed style would really suit this text. So they asked me to take it on board as well. And I, of course, said yes. So, yeah.
Fabulous. So what do you as an illustrator do when you receive, you know, because you get the text, right? Like just the words,
yeah.
Not a lot of context beyond a chat with the publisher and understanding that the series, you know, context as well, the Nature Storybook series. How do you decide if it's a project? Because you also have to be making the decision that it's a project that you want to work on, right? So how do you decide from that that's something that you want to do?
Yeah, well, firstly, with this one, like how could I say no to illustrating?
How could you say no?
How could I say no to illustrating this powerhouse of a woman's book? And secondly, for me, what I usually do with any of the texts that I illustrate, I usually get sent the manuscripts and I have a read through, and it's if it excites me and if I can imagine spending 6 months plus illustrating this story, well, then I say yes. So, yeah, and I also really love bees and I really love honey and I really love flowers and things. So it just seemed like a perfect fit, to be honest. So it was a no.
Okay. So yeah. Where do you begin when you're creating the illustrations? Like you've got the manuscript, you've read the manuscript. What do you do next? How do you kind of like go about creating that visual world for the book?
Yeah, so usually I would start with doing like a bit of research and gathering images, wandering, you know, sometimes depending on the subject matter, I might visit a zoo or visit somewhere. With this particular text, though, I started doing some sketches of the main characters. That's what the publishers wanted to see, so they could really see that I could draw people. A lot of my books have been animals and I hadn't done as many books with people, so they wanted to know I could draw people and things like that. So I did that first. And then the next thing I did was I did my research and I visited a friend that has a native bee, stingless beehive, and I sat there and watched the bees being busy in her garden and took some photographs of things. So I did that. And then, yeah, and then the next step is like to create the thumbnail roughs, which then goes on to, you know, several rounds of thumbnails and things like that before I sort of get those approved before I work on the final illustrations, which were done in watercolor and color pencil.
Fantastic. And this is a serious question because everyone knows about Megan and end papers and how she will wax lyrical about end papers forever. Did you feel additional pressure when creating the end papers for this particular book?
Well, to be honest with you, I did feel a bit of extra pressure. But not too bad because I also work as a freelance textile designer in between children's book projects.
Ah.
Yeah, and prior to working as a children's book illustrator, I worked as a textile designer. So they actually are one of the few things in life that I'm confident in creating. I can't really cook dinner for my family, but I can do end papers and designs like that. So, yeah, I actually wasn't too worried about it. So
yeah, and I have to butt in there because I've been showing a few kids at school and my own kids the book, everybody gasps when I open the end papers because, I mean, everybody in my life does know how much I love end papers and I just keep going, oh, can't you just imagine this is wallpaper and bedspreads and pillowcases? They are so beautiful. I'm so grateful.
Oh, thank you.
It's really interesting. I didn't know that you also did textile design. And I guess what you're looking at with those end papers is that repetitive kind of pattern that sort of sums up the feeling of the book, isn't it? So are you sort of where do you pull an element out from somewhere within the main design or do you create new elements for the actual end papers? I've never got to talk to someone about end papers before, so we're going to do this right now, Max.
Yeah, well, I always try and create a new element for the end papers.
Ah.
Like Megan has discussed in many of her book reviews, they're like a little hint into the story that's to come. And I think they do, as you said, Al, like they do summarize the story as well. So I think they're a really important design element in a book design. So I painted little elements for those end papers. I did lots of different versions in rough format and, you know, liaising with the designer as well, Nicolette at Walker and things. And with those particular ones, I painted little elements and then I ended up repeating it in Photoshop for those.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like there needs to be a book. I feel like someone needs to create the book of end papers.
Me.
I'm going to put Megan forward for this. The book of end papers, which is just all about the design, like is just beautiful design and then like a paragraph explaining the illustrator's motivation. Let's get this happening, shall we?
I think that's a brilliant idea.
I think it's a brilliant idea. Let's get this done, people. Let's go back to the beehive briefly, though, before we go on to all new publishing projects. Do you actually have a favourite page or spread in the book, Max? Is there something, you know, in there that you're particularly, you know, in love with as far as the creation of this visual world?
Oh, gosh, this is a hard one to answer.
I know.
But I think I do really love the pollinators spread. After painting, like, endless sort of bees, little tiny black bees over and over and over again, it was quite fun to paint all the different pollinators such as, you know, possums and birds and things like that. So I quite enjoyed that spread. And also I really like the page where Willow brings the beehive home to her garden and she's introducing the bees to her garden and her family. And in that particular spread, the chickens that are in the spread, they're inspired by the book designer Nicolette's pet chickens. So I like that I got to put a little nod to her into the book as well because she's, you know, spent so much time designing the book behind the scenes. So it was just a little thank you to her as well. So
fantastic. Yeah. Okay, Megan, just going back to you, what surprised you most? Because, you know, as I said, you've read and reviewed a lot of picture books. This is your first, you know, inside hint into the actual publishing process of a picture book. What surprised you most about it? Or was there anything that surprised you about it?
Look, there's always things that surprise me, isn't there?
You're often surprised. It's true.
I'm surprised by my life and how it's turned out. There's an extra two children I seem to have picked up. What a surprise. It surprised me the distance that was kept between the author and the illustrator. So Max and I didn't talk about the process and I knew that that happened. I have spoken to a number of many authors and illustrators over 25 years about this. And I do find it surprising that you don't work collaboratively on a book together. You know, at first I found that a little bit hard because I was desperate to see what Max was up to. And I was like, what if I don't like it? But then even in the last 2 weeks when I've been reading the book to my advanced copy to some kids, I've been like, oh, like I'm still finding surprising stuff in Max's illustrations. And I don't know. I mean, publishers are there for a reason, aren't they? And editors. And maybe they bring out the best in the author and then the illustrator and then the product as a whole. I found it interesting, surprising, but now I'm looking at it going, oh, there's probably very much a reason for that. I don't know what the answer to that is.
So speaking of you actually, you know, you're reading it aloud to your students, et cetera, how do you, like, You are the celebrity teacher librarian. I'm sorry, but I'm just putting that out there. Celebrity. I mean, I know they describe you as celebrated on the back of the book, and I feel like that was a missed opportunity. I'm just saying, Walker Books, missed opportunity. How do you see the book being used in schools? Like, how would you use it if it turned up on your desk out of the blue? Just give me,
I have
just
so
give me
many.
The lesson plan in five, you know, 5 seconds.
I do. I have. I wrote the lesson plan before I wrote the book. You know, I wrote this book for a lesson plan.
Of course, yes. So,
and as a primary school teacher, I was really keen to set the story in an authentic school setting that would allow those connections to the reader, because we talk about connection to self, connection to place with young people all the time, and I wanted that connection. And Max has done a beautiful job of making the school setting look really authentic. I knew that the text could be used for both version 9 of the Australian curriculum in science and English. And again, you know, most authors don't write to the curriculum, but because I wrote this book for a lesson plan, I was very much looking at the curriculum, and I was looking at genres. I was looking at fiction versus nonfiction, informative text, vocab, visual literacy. So it's got very strong links to the curriculum. And, you know, I have so many lessons planned around the beehive.
Of course you do. Now, I know there are also teacher's notes for the book, and I know that you did not write them. So how was it seeing those and seeing your book from another educator's perspective?
Yeah, again, surprising. I found that interesting. I kind of had this assumption that I would write the teacher's notes because I am a teacher and I've written teacher's notes in the past, but it was fantastic. Walker Books has asked a teacher librarian who is also a colleague of mine who does a lot of teacher's notes around Australia, Christina Wheeler, to write the teacher's notes. And that different perspective yet again just added something to the teacher's notes. I've got my own idea in my head of how I would use the book in a classroom, but Christina Wheeler has used version 9 of the English curriculum and really teased out things that perhaps I didn't even see about the text in particular and the illustrations. And I really love the teacher's notes, which will be available on the Walker Books website from February. And then I will use my own ideas in events that I'm doing, and then classroom teachers will probably use the teacher's notes in the actual classroom. So I found it really interesting to see how the teacher's notes were developed.
Well, this has just been such a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. It's been excellent having Max here as a referee to keep us on the straight and narrow. I guess my final question is just to ask you both what you're hoping that readers will take away from The Beehive. And I'll start with you, Max. What are you hoping that readers will take from The Beehive?
Well, I really hope children will cherish this book and, of course, enjoy learning about native bees. And I hope that they start to notice them more in their backyards and in their environment. And I gave an advanced copy of this book to my cousin's little girl last week, and she loved the book so much that she asked her mum if she could take it to bed with her. So if she woke up early, she could.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And so she's like, she wanted to take it to bed. So if she woke up early, she could look at the pictures again straight away. So that really made me happy to hear. So I hope other children love it as much as she did. And that's what I hope for.
That's divine. And okay, so if people want to find out more about you, Max, where can they find you online? Where's the best place to have a look at your work and what you're up to?
Yeah, so mainly I've got a lot of work on Instagram. I think the handle for that is MH Design Illustration. And I also have a website, which is maxhamiltonillustration.com.au.
Fantastic. And what about you, Megan Daly? What are you hoping readers will take away from The Beehive?
Well, I love that your cousin's daughter had it in their bed, Max, because I have a gorgeous photo of my eldest daughter when she was very, very young with a copy of Peter Carnavis's Jessica's Box in her bed. And it means such a lot to me when a child takes a book to bed with them. You know they've really connected with it. What I'm hoping that readers take away from The Beehive is obviously an interest in bees, because bees are not only essential to life on Earth, but they are also endlessly fascinating. I really wanted a product, a book in this case, that could be read in homes and libraries and that would pique an interest in these gorgeous little powerhouses of pollinators, because I just absolutely adore bees and want to share that.
Fantastic. Well, I think it will definitely do all of those things. And I just wanted to say, well, A, how much I've enjoyed our conversation today. I love getting into the process. It's been, I mean, obviously I've been sort of front row seat to the process of this for quite some time now, but it's just great to talk to both of you about how that all came about. So I guess all I can say is thank you to both of you for taking us behind the beehive. So Megan Daly, how did you find that your spot in the hot spot, in the hot seat, you know, the first interview about your picture book? You did very well, by the way. I'd love the fact that you've taken on all of my advice and thoughts.
I feel like
and
you've
training.
Tutored me over the years about how to do an author interview, be interviewed as an author. And it was really good for me to think, particularly about the elevator pitch, which I've heard you talk about before and I've never really done myself. So no, it was different to just doing the podcast with you, where we do just kind of quality waffle and I know what I'm doing. This felt much more alarming, I'm going to say.
Alarming.
But
you're not supposed to feel alarming. You're supposed to feel like you're in safe hands, like you know what you're talking about.
Look,
you aren't talking about your book, right? So you
know
your book.
First, it was the first interview and, you know, I hope I got it all right.
Well, you did. Apart from the fact that you won't call yourself an author, which, like, let's not even discuss. That's, so I keep referring to you as the, in case you missed, that is why I keep calling her an author every 37 seconds in this interview, because it's important. Like, it's like I say to every writer, if you're writing something, you need to own it. You need to say, I'm a writer. This is what I'm doing. If your book is out there and it is published, you are an author. And so you have to own that as well, because you've worked so hard on this book, you and Max together, and you've created something that is absolutely lovely. Why would you not just go, look at me? You should be strutting your stuff. You should be wearing a t-shirt that says, I'm an author.
Mm-hmm. If authoring doesn't work out for you, you could take up counselling authors. Like,
I'll just actually, no, I'm just going to start. I think there's more money to be made in merch. So I might just start with the I'm an author, hashtag I'm an author t-shirts, along with the hashtag quality waffle t-shirts and all of the other things that I'm supposed to be doing. And apparently now also a book about end papers, which is also on the agenda.
I like wrote that down. I'm totally up for a book about end papers.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast. We've decided that we're not going to do quick tips or anything this week. We figure you've probably heard quite enough from us. What are you up to in the next week or so until we meet again?
I am off to see Tim Minchin with some of my lovely old neighbours. So I'm off to a gig, which is really exciting. I love being able to be a grown-up and discard the children for a little while and get dressed up and go out with the beekeeper and lovely friends. So we're having dinner and off to see Tim Minchin. So I'm really excited about that now that we're living with my parents for a while, you know,
built-in babysitters. Ooh, we hadn't thought about that as a bonus, had we?
I know.
Well, I'm not counselling writers this week. Funny that you should mention that, but I am doing quite a few coaching sessions this week. So I do some creative career coaching via my website if you're interested in, if you are an author out there and you'd like me to take you through the process of how to do a really good interview or any of the other things that we talk about and do, you can book one. I'm happy to chat to you. And I'm also doing some Zoom sort of catch-ups with my writers group, my Write with Alison Tate group. So it's a big week for me this week of talking about writing. Yeah. And I'm also hoping, I do love talking about writing. It's so much easier than actually writing. But I am also doing some writing as well. So I'm still working very hard on my two manuscripts, my fun one and my hard one. And
I was going to say, are they still fun and hard?
As discussed, the hard one has become fun and the fun one has become hard, because I've reached that sort of point where so the research is really starting to kick in for me on the hard one. And so I've got stuff to be going on with. Whereas the fun one, I've reached the point where I've really got to think about what the next, you know, beat in the story is and where my character's going and what's going to happen. You know, Alison Rushby is listening to this and rolling her eyes, because she would know. She has a plan. She has a spreadsheet, and Alison Tate is just rolling along and making it up as she goes along. That's fine. That's one of the most important things I can tell you if you want to be a writer. You've got to figure out what your process is and you need to write to that. In the meantime, while I leave you with those
words of wisdom,
philosophical thoughts, where will we find you until we meet again, Megan?
You'll find me at megandaily.com.au and you'll find me on Facebook and Instagram at Megan Daily Books.
And you will find me at alisontait.com, alisontait.com. And you will also find me at Alison Tait Writer on Facebook and Instagram. And we will look forward to seeing you again next time when we will have some details about book launches for The Beehive. Look forward to chatting then.
See you later.